Over 240 people are known to have died in the earthquake which struck central Italy on Wednesday. Dozens more are feared still trapped or dead in the towns of Amatrice, Accumoli, and Pescara del Tronto. Thousands of rescuers are trying to move rubble and debris in the mountainous region. The 6.2 magnitude quake hit 100 kilometers northeast of the capital, Rome. Colombia's government and the leftist guerrilla group FARC have reached a groundbreaking peace deal that promises to end the country's five-decade-long war. Hundreds of Colombians took to the streets of the country's capital, Bogota, in celebration of the peace accord. Andrea Arenas reports.
The accord was reached after almost 4 years of talks in Cuba. The agreement includes a timetable in which FARC's estimated 7,000 guerrilla members will have to lay down their arms and reintegrate into Colombian society. On October 2nd, Colombians will go to the polls and vote on whether they accept the deal reached by Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos and the FARC leaders.
The UN is asking that Saudi Arabia be held accountable for human rights violations committed during airstrikes on Yemen. This comes alongside U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's arrival in Saudi Arabia to work on reviving peace talks among the warring parties. FSN's Laura Cantikin has this report.
Speaking to reporters in Geneva, a UN human rights chief reported that Saudi's infractions are a punishable offense under humanitarian law. In the 18-month-long conflict, the Saudi coalition has hit hospitals and markets, sites protected during wartime to minimize civilian deaths. According to the UN, nearly 4,000 civilians have been killed since the onset of the conflict, with more than 2,000 of those due to airstrikes. The UN, however, did not determine Saudi Arabia's actions to be war crimes, saying it was up to a judiciary power to decide. Meanwhile, in Jeddah, U.S. Secretary John Kerry held regional talks with Saudi Deputy Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman on resolving Yemen's conflict.
The U.S. government has praised the response of Afghan security forces in dealing with an attack on the American University in Kabul. 13 people, including students, a professor, and police, died when gunmen attacked the university on Wednesday. The attackers were eventually shot dead by Afghan special forces. White House spokesperson Josh Earnest said that the attack showed the need for constant vigilance in Afghanistan.
It's an indication that there is additional work that needs to be done to address the security situation in Afghanistan. But the Afghan security forces are making progress, and they are making that progress both because of their commitment to fight for their country, but also because of the support that they're receiving from U.S. and NATO trainers and advisors.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
You see, this is the world we live in. The United Kingdom and David Cameron gets Saudi Arabia a seat on the UN Human Rights Council. Then Britain sells £3 billion worth of weapons to the Saudis, which they obliterate men, women and children in Yemen with. This is the world we live in. And they'll tell you that Bashar al-Assad is a bad man. It's Thursday's programme, the 25th of August 2016. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you're well.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
The benefit system in Britain is tyrannical, I wrote today. It is. There's no other way of putting that. Now, a good friend of ours, a lady called Lynn Wright, was in hospital for life-saving surgery for a heart condition when the firm that carries out health assessments for the Department for Work and Pensions ruled that she had refused to attend assessments. Laid up in hospital having serious heart surgery. You didn't turn up, love. We're going to stop your vital £140 a week PIP payments. All of this happened earlier in the month. Lynn joins me to explain. It's made the national press this week. She joins us this hour. And Sandra Fecht was on this programme first back in early 2015. Terrific lady. She's a counsellor and therapist based in Ontario. Now, Sandra went public to say that she was counselling lots of patients telling her the same story, describing ritual satanic abuse. And she heard so many similar stories from a variety of unconnected patients that she felt she had to speak out. We spoke to her at length. David Icke has spoken to her, spoken about her in his recent book, Phantom Self. Sandra is in the UK next month for a series of workshops, and she's going to talk to me in the second hour about those and more. Do not miss that, all of that, in tonight's Richie Allen Show. And we're broadcasting, of course, live on alternatecurrentradio.com, fabradiointernational.com, welcoming our listeners on those two platforms, and of course davidicke.com/headlines. It's belting it down outside, raining cats and dogs, yet the humidity is unbearable. It's incredibly humid, muggy evening here in this great city, but it's miserable to look out the window now. The window's to my left. I can see what's going on outside the window there. So tweet at Richie Allen Show, email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Please, please join in the discussion. Let us know what you think of any of the stories that I'm covering tonight. But also, if there's something else you want to mention, please do that. Right. Well, you know, I've been saving a story for you for the right time. Something that I've been dealing with for about 4 months. And I was going to bring it up on one of the Sunday Views, and I didn't. I thought, we'll end up doing a story on the programme, and this will coincide with it. It'll be the right time. And tonight is, bearing in mind, we're going to be chatting with Lynn Wright shortly. Now, my little story pales in, or pales by comparison to Lynn Wright's story. But I've got to tell you this. This is the country we inhabit. Those of us who live in Britain, or in the United Kingdom, that is. Listen to this. Back in the first week in May, I can't remember the day. It's got to be 2 or 3 days into May. I got a letter from Manchester City Council. Now, the letter was dated April the 29th, 2016. This might be, well, it won't be difficult to follow. I'm not the worst storyteller in the world, so I'll try and keep it simple. So on April 29th, 2016, they wrote me a letter, right, and sent it to me. Now, they claimed in the letter that I owed them £286.24 for council tax for the year 2014 to 2015, right? And in the letter, it said that a magistrate's court had granted a liability order against me, wait for it, on January 29th, 2015. 15 months earlier. It's now 19 months ago. So they said an order was made against you by a magistrate, a liability order, and you owe us £286.24. And if you don't pay it in 2 weeks, we're going to send enforcement agents to visit you to seize property. Now, I've been around a long time, right? And I don't want to diminish this, because a lot of people go through this sort of thing and they don't have my experience of dealing with people, and they panic. So I rang them up anyway, naturally enough, and I spoke to a woman called Josie, and I recorded the call. Now, I can't play the call, right, because I recorded it without the prior consent of Josie. But needless to say, I've sent it to Manchester City Council. I sent them the MP3 of the call. Josie was obnoxious, and she said, you claimed unemployment assistant or job seeker's allowance for a short time in late 2014. Now, I did. Anybody who remembers the beginning of this radio programme, at the very beginning, when we launched the programme in September 2014, I'd been assured by a businessman in New Zealand that he was going to pay for the programme for a year. He was going to sponsor a small salary for me and the overheads of the programme for a year. So we weren't asking for donations or for listener support at the time. But this guy was a con man, and he disappeared after a few weeks, and he left me owing money, and he owed me money. So I had no money. And at the time, David said to me, why don't you do a crowdfunding appeal and try and raise a few quid and then ask the listeners to make a contribution to the programme? But in the meantime, I didn't have any money. And I've never claimed unemployment assistance in my life. So having a chat with the future Mrs. Allen, I said, well, I'll briefly claim the £70 a week unemployment assistance. God knows I've paid enough tax and all of that. So when I was granted unemployment assistance, obviously my council tax bill was reduced, because if you're not earning a living, you can't pay the full £140 a week. Excuse me, £140 a month council tax bill. So they gave me a bit of relief. Now, I think I was signing for unemployment assistance for about 11 weeks. And then we raised £7,000 in crowdfunding in late 2014, half of which went to bills that were owed for equipment for the programme. And so I informed the Department of Work and Pensions that I no longer needed job seekers allowance, and that was the end of that. Next thing, I got a letter saying your council tax payments are back up to £140 a month. We thought no more about it. We paid the full bill for 2014-2015. We paid the full bill for 2015-2016, and we're currently paying it monthly now as we go. So this woman, Josie, says to me, when you were claiming unemployment assistance, we gave you more of a discount on your council tax bill than we should have done. And I said, well, you can go and piss off. If you made a mistake, you pay for it. Oh, it doesn't work like that. You owe us more money. I said, I can't possibly. There's no money owed. You said to me, pay less because you are now unemployed. Pay less. And when you become employed, you'll go back to paying the full bill. So if you gave me more of a discount than I should have gotten, well, tough titty, said the kitty. Now, she was incredibly rude, this woman, obnoxious. And in the end, because she wasn't getting anywhere with me, she hung up on me. I've got the call recorded. So long story short, I ignored it. But they kept sending me letters, and the letters got more and more obnoxious. We're going to send enforcement agents around. Your credit rating is going to be affected, and all of this garbage. But I ignored it until they said they were going to pass it to a company. And I checked out that they use a company even called, let's make sure now I've got the name of the company right. It'll come to me. I've got the paperwork here somewhere. They use a company, right? I've got it here. I'll dig it out and I'll give it to you in a second. I'll tell you who it is because it's important. So I contacted my local MP. I won't tell you who he is because he told me. You can probably guess. I'm in South Manchester. You can probably guess who he is. And I said, look, I'm not putting up with this nonsense. We pay this tyrannical bill anyway, which we shouldn't pay. And I only pay it because the future Mrs. Allen wouldn't have it any other way. If I was living on my own, I wouldn't pay the bill at all. I would ignore it. And that would be the end of it. I don't agree with it. I don't believe in it. But for an easy life, we paid the bill. So he was disgusted by this. And he wrote to them several times and said, basically, you made a mistake. This is outrageous. Leave the guy alone. But they wouldn't have it. And they kept sending me the letters. Anyway, a couple of weeks back, I got a letter from the enforcement agency company. And they said, we're going to come around. If you don't ring us and settle the bill, we're going to come around and we might seize property. You owe Manchester City Council £286.24. So to cut a long story short, I rang them up, recorded that call as well, told them I was recording the call. And I said, this is the way it's going to be. You're not going to send anybody to my house. I don't owe you any money. I certainly don't owe Manchester City Council any money. Don't send me any more letters. And under no circumstances, send anybody around to my house. They won't be tolerated. The guy was quite nice, actually. And he conceded that they didn't really have any authorities. That all he could really do was basically harass me until such time as I gave them the money to give to Manchester City Council, or until such time as they got tired of harassing me. See, we don't have any powers. I said, I know you don't. I know you don't. In a civil matter like this, you certainly have no powers of entry. You don't have any entitlement whatsoever. All you can do is ask me to pay the money. I'm not going to pay it. And what was interesting is, and I will eventually play, not today, but I will eventually play some of that conversation, was that he conceded that Manchester City Council were basically a client of the company, and that they contact his company, the enforcement company, and they just tell them that Mrs. X or Mr. Y owes us money, now go and collect it. And I said to the guy, and I recorded this, what proof does your company require from Manchester City Council or any council that in fact they are owed money by Mr. X or Mrs. Y? The guy said, none. So I said, in series then, I'm a businessman and I have a limited company called The Richie Allen Show. Doesn't do really any business really with anybody, but that's how we pay taxes, through the Richie Allen Show, a limited company. So if I wanted to point at somebody and say that person owes me money for services rendered, you and your company wouldn't check to see has there been any issue with the services rendered, and you would go and harass them for money. And the guy basically said, yes. Yes, we would. That's how we do business. I thought it was incredible. Now, where it is at the moment is they haven't come anywhere near me. It's very unlikely they will. Interestingly enough, I was telling my landlord this, and he was telling me that he received notification about a year ago from the council saying that he had to pay a fine because his car drove in a bus lane. Now, he was absolutely adamant that he never, ever drove in a bus lane. Not even, his wheels didn't even touch the line. He was that certain it never happened. So he challenged them to prove this. They didn't offer any proof, and he said he had to pay it or else enforcement agents, bailiffs, the usual blah, blah, blah. But like me, of course, he was clued up and he just ignored them. And when the enforcement agent people came around, he told them to take a run and jump, and that's exactly what they did. What I'm describing to you is a tyranny. This is a tyrannical society. And I don't have to tell you anyway. You know this. This is allowed in a so-called free country in 2016. Imagine sending somebody a letter in April 2016 to say, in January 2015, we granted a liability order against you without informing you, by the way. We didn't tell you about it. Because, of course, if they had informed me about it, we would have turned up to the magistrate's court and we would have gotten it thrown out. But they don't tell you that. 15 months they wait, then they say, oh, you owe us £286.24. Now, that pales into insignificance, and it's a small story placed alongside what's happened to Lynn Wright, whom we're going to hear from in a couple of minutes' time. But this is what's going on all around the country. And it occurred to me, and I've been sharing this story with friends of mine, also working in the media, also used to dealing with stories like this. When I worked in Waterford local radio many years ago, we often got calls from people in situations like this where they were being harassed by the local council, and what can we do? And we would help them out privately, not on air. We would point them in the right direction, go and see her, go and see him. But the vast majority of people, I think, under pressure, under money pressures, they don't know what they can and what they can't do. And they get bullied and intimidated by these people. And they try and make payments and they get into further arrears. And they end up completely ill because of a tyrannical council. What was interesting, I'll finish with this, because this will make you laugh. I annoyed them so much by sending them email after email, telling them to go and get stuffed, that they said they would review it. They would review this. They would have their own internal review. Now, needless to say, they came back and said, we've reviewed it and we're pretty sure we're in order. We may have made a mistake in leaving it 15 months to contact you, but we're certain you owe us this money. And by the way, they said, we don't know if anybody called Josie who ever worked here, so we can't deal with the allegations you made about the abusive response when you phoned. So I sent them the MP3 and I've never heard from them again. That was the MP3 of me chatting with Josie, abusive Josie. And of course I found out that the councils don't handle these calls. You can't phone the council. You phone a third party employed by them. It's a tyranny. It's a tyranny. And I'm guessing half, I can't make up percentages. But if what my landlord tells me is true, and I've heard many stories like that, lots of people are getting notices in the post to say, you've committed a traffic violation. We caught it on camera. And they're offering no proof of this, by the way. It's just a racket, isn't it? This is tyranny. This is Britain in 2016. I thought I'd share that with you. I'm sure some of our listeners listening to this will have experienced similar things over the years, particularly those who live in the United Kingdom. Needless to say, neither the enforcement agents, neither Manchester City Council will never get any £286 from me, never, not in a million years. That's the way it is. Right, it's exactly 19 and a half minutes past the hour. Quick break, back with Lynn Wright in a couple of minutes.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now. Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the program. I've misplaced the letter. I can't remember the name of the enforcement agent that contacted me on behalf of Manchester City Council. It'll come to me probably because I've just forgotten it. I thought I had the paper here in the studio. I was going to give you their name. They're one of the most well-known, I understand, in Britain for doing that. But like I said, the guy I spoke with was very polite and he basically conceded they didn't have any power whatsoever. All they could do was come and harass. He did say, though, keep any vehicles locked up well to stop, the potential of somebody to try and take your car or something like that. Crazy stuff, isn't it? We must do a whole show on this sometimes. I know it probably won't mean too much to our listeners in the United States, mind, but it's a very serious issue nonetheless. Time for some music then. I want to welcome once again our listeners joining us on Alternate Current Radio. Check out alternatecurrentradio.com, fabradiointernational.com and davidike.com/headlines. Do check out theworldwidewakeup.com. David is in New York very, very soon, Los Angeles and San Francisco before coming back to Europe. You don't want to miss him. He's in amazing form. Top class. This is Don Henley, The Boys of Summer on The Richie Allen Show in association with davidike.com. I'm coming back with Lynn Wright. Don't miss her. Don Henley, Boys of Summer on The Richie Allen Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio show. Terrific stuff. Raymond McGovern is, it's his birthday today. Sent Raymond a tweet. Happy birthday, Ray McGovern. I know he listens into this program occasionally. Top man is Ray. Sent him a text. Right, let's move on then. This is a very, very serious story, this indeed, because it's one of many, I believe. And I know this because I've been speaking about this since last year. You might remember Mike Sivier coming on the programme. Might play some audio from Mike from last year shortly. But let me read you this from Tuesday's Mirror, as a Daily Mirror national tabloid here in the UK. Let me read this for you. An open heart surgery patient has been stripped of her benefits after missing disability assessments while in hospital fighting for her life. Lynn Wright has been told she has lost her £140 a week personal independence payments because of her refusal to make the assessment appointments. Lynn is from Colwyn Bay in Wales, underwent open heart surgery in May and missed two appointments, one because the procedure was rearranged. She missed a third appointment after collapsing during her recuperation and being rushed back to hospital in June. The Department of Work and Pensions told her on the 3rd of August that she had lost the payments. Lynn said at the time that she was on antidepressants and felt or feels suicidal. Now, we know Lynn well. She's a regular listener to the Richie Allen Show. Got in touch with us about this story, and I'm delighted to welcome her back to the show. Lynn, you're very welcome. How are you?
Hello, Richie.
Now, I understand that there's been a good conclusion to all of this, but that really isn't the point. Tell us about that, Lynn. How does it happen that you end up going to hospital for something as absolutely serious as that, and they can just decide you haven't showed up, you missed an appointment? Were they informed, Lynn, of what was happening to you?
Well, yes. Initially, they phoned me up before a surgery, and my surgery at first was going to be on the 27th of May. And they phoned me up before that and said, only appointment available to you is the 29th of May. Is that all right? And I said, well, no, because I won't be out of hospital by then. I'll still be in after having open heart surgery. So they classed that as a refusal. That, you know, I wasn't available, and they said, "Oh, we'll contact you again."
Lynn, so, hang on a second, Lynn. Let's because our listeners will you know, they'll be scratching their heads. They contact you and they make an appointment, and you say no because I won't be out of hospital by then. Holy yeah. God, you're in hospital, right? And they say they class that as a refusal to attend.
Yes, yeah. I mean, the logic of it. I mean, I would have assumed that. The fact that they were trying to assess me to see whether I was fit for work, the logic would sort of state that if I was in a hospital having open heart surgery, obviously, did they really need to do the assessment because I wasn't fit for work? So, but logic doesn't seem to come into it at the moment. You know, it's it was a bit bizarre that they still wanted to assess me when I was going to be in the worst condition ever.
Now, Lynn, you argued with him. Obviously, you're a Celtic woman. You're a fiery lass. I'm fiery. We're fiery, us Celts. So you said, hang on a second now. I'm going to be in hospital. I've got a serious heart condition. How in the name of Jesus can you tell me that I'm going to be punished for refusing? So you said this. You know, what did they say to that? What was their response?
Well, I said to them I wasn't refusing. I said they were more than welcome to come and visit me in the hospital and perform the interview there. But they said, oh, no, we can't do that. So I was like, well, I'm not refusing. It's a change of venue, you know, just do it there. But they wouldn't do it. And they said they'd recontact me, which they did. And they said they wanted to do the interview before the operation on the 19th of May instead. And I accepted that one. Even though I was sort of, you know, I had a lot on my mind. I was, you know, really ill, passing out and going dizzy and struggling for breath and everything because I really needed the operation. But I said, well, you know, if you want to do the assessment, you're not going to get the right picture at the moment because I'm not at my best. But so I agreed to the 19th, but within 5 minutes of them making that arrangement, Liverpool Heart and Chest Hospital phoned me and said, look, we've got a cancellation. Can we do your operation on the 20th of May? But it means you're coming in by lunchtime on the 19th. And I was like, oh, grief. So I accepted it because, you know, I was desperate for the operation. And I rung Capita straight back and I said, look, I'm sorry about this, but I've just had a cancellation. Do you want me to send you the proof? They said they're sending a letter out with the change of the operation. Do you want me to send you the letter? And they said, no, it won't be necessary. But this is your refusal. I said, it's not a refusal. You're more than welcome to come and do it in the hospital. But they, again, they said they weren't able to do that. So they said, again.
Lynn, can I jump in there? Did any of these people consider for a second that they're dealing with a lady who's going to have deadly serious, potentially deadly serious, open heart surgery? Might be stressed, might be worried. I get terrified, Lynn, going to the dentist, and I'm not saying that for a laugh. If I thought I had to face open heart surgery to have a valve inserted in my aorta, I'd be in a bad way. Did any of these people think we could be having a serious impact on this lady's health? Did it occur to them?
Well, I don't think I can't speak for them, but they didn't seem to be any sympathy or any compassion or even I didn't think they could comprehend what I was going through at the time. They didn't seem to have any feelings. You know, it was just black and white to them. They had this assessment to do, and I was being awkward because I wasn't, you know, available for their appointment.
But you weren't being awkward because you were telling them the hospital has had a cancellation. They're going to get me back in. They're going to get me in earlier. I can arrange for the hospital to confirm all of this. You were being incredibly decent, considering the circumstances, and you were being incredibly, what's the word I'm looking for here now? You were being incredibly helpful to them by giving them this information.
I didn't realise at the time, obviously, how far it was going to go. I didn't have a lot of fight in me at the time, obviously, because I was in a bad way. Obviously, they don't do heart operations for no reason. You know, they leave it until the last minute, until they really have to do it. So, you know, I was struggling and I didn't have a lot of fight in me. And I was just trying to get through the next hour and the next day. And they were sort of snapping at my heels. And I tried to accommodate everything and I tried to offer them proof that, you know, whatever they needed as proof that I wasn't lying, you know, I wasn't making it up. But they said it wasn't necessary. But they weren't giving me options of any alternative dates. They were just plucking a date out and throwing it at me. And if I couldn't attend it because I was going to be in hospital, then that was a refusal.
It's incredible. By the way, Capita, for our listeners, just to fill in the blanks for our overseas listeners, this is a firm, a private firm, and the Department of Work and Pensions outsources all of this work, all of the assessment work, and all the punitive work, I suppose you could say, to this particular company. Did you ring your MP, Lynn, to say, listen, I'm in a bad situation here. I'm seriously unwell. I'm facing a very serious operation, and these people are making my life a misery. Did you tell anybody?
Not at that stage. I mean, I was already in contact with the MP because of the situation that had brought me to the heart operation. You know, it should have really been detected a lot sooner, and there was a lot of issues on that score. So I was already in contact with him because it hadn't been picked up on. And I had been struggling for years and not knowing what was wrong with me, going back and to the doctor, struggling to get through the day, being treated like a hypochondriac, etc. And then finally they found it because I collapsed in 2013 and I was rushed to Bangor and I had pneumonia, pleurisy and pericarditis. And obviously they did scans of my heart and found this. I'd been born with only two parts to the aortic valve. It was a bicuspid valve and I had stenosis on it, but I was also found to have lupus as well, and that was raging. And it took me, you know, collapsing and being in a really bad way for the everything to be diagnosed, and I was finally sort of, oh well, I'm not a hypochondriac after all.
Yeah,
you know, so I'd been through all that, which was traumatic, and it was my son that got in touch with the MP and because he was disgusted about, you know, they nearly lost me then because of it not being picked up. I had an exercise ECG in 1998, because I was breathless, and it was, you know, I couldn't do the treadmill that they had me on. I was struggling, and instead of finding out why I was struggling, they just put me down as exercise intolerant and didn't investigate it further. So it should have been picked up then. But as I say, I just tried to carry on as best I could, knowing that there was something wrong, but nobody listening.
They were throwing appointments at you at various stages of you being in hospital, before, during and after the operation, when you had the operation, and then you collapsed, you got unwell and you had to go back in. And you bent over backwards to accommodate them, even to the point of getting your mother to ring them and to tell them what was going on. And even though she did, they gave your mother no satisfaction at all, said that you'd refuse for a third time, and passed your case back to the DWP. And that's when you get a letter saying, correct me if I'm wrong on the timeline, Lynn, that's when you get a letter saying basically we're going to suspend or stop paying you your PIP, your personal independence payment. Is that how it worked?
Well, my mum also rung the DWP because I was getting stressed in hospital saying, you know, my benefit's going to be stopped now. They're going to say, no, they won't. I've rung Capita and I've explained everything. And I said, no, they will. And I tried to discharge myself from hospital because I got that worked up at you know, I needed to make myself available. Otherwise, it was going to cause chaos. My benefit was going to be stopped. But in the end, I think it was on the 28th of June, I think it was, while I was still in hospital, my mother phoned the DWP and she explained where I'd been, what ward I'd been in, what dates and everything. And she offered then to send the paperwork of the proof. But they said no, they'd just put a note on the file and I was to ring them again when I was out of hospital, which I did. I rung them and I said, look, you know, I've been and I've got the proof. I've got all the discharge letters. Do you want me to send them? And they said no. We'll put a note on the file and we'll be in touch again if we need to re-refer you back to Capita. And we left it at that. And then on the 3rd of August, I got a letter saying, and it was referring to my benefits that had been stopped from the 1st of August. So they'd already been stopped by the time I received the letter. So the 3rd of August, I get the letter saying that because I hadn't completed the consultation, well, I sent you a copy of the letter, didn't I? And I hadn't given a good enough reason for not attending, then they'd come to the conclusion that I wasn't entitled to the money.
You hadn't given a good enough reason, eh?
And it just pulled the rug from under me. I just flopped into the chair and I burst into tears and I was like, because I was struggling, you know, just trying to recover from an operation, and I had allergic reaction to the warfarin tablets and everything. I had to have an alternative, and I was worried that the lupus was going to kick off and attack my new heart valve and everything. I was going to pieces just over the operation, and then this came, and it was just the final straw, you know. I ended up going to the doctors. He tried to put me on antidepressants, but I had allergic reaction to them. I only had one. I went like a zombie. I couldn't. I even forgot to feed the dog. I was totally out.
You were numb. Do you know? Yeah. Is that where you were feeling so low that you started contemplating silly things?
It was when I was in hospital, and because my mother came with the appointment for Capita. And I knew that if I couldn't make myself available for it, that it was going to cause a lot of chaos. They were going to stop my benefit. Mum thought I was being dramatic. And no, she was trying to calm me down, saying, no, you know, I've informed them, everything's going to be all right. But then also I got a letter off my critical illness insurance, because I was fighting them to pay off my mortgage, because I had critical illness insurance. I'd been trying to make a claim on it because I had critical illness. And you think, you know, when you take these policies out that everything's fine, and if you're ever ill and you can't work, that...
They're gangsters, Lynn. Lynn's are gangsters. Insurance companies are gangsters. Yeah. That's all they are. Yeah. We, like idiots, we pay our £15, £20 a month for our life insurance or whatever it is, we're idiots. Because, of course, when the inevitable happens, they will have their high-powered, high-priced lawyers go through the contracts with a fine-tooth comb, go over your life with a fine-tooth comb, and find some reason to deny you payment. These people are gangsters. I want to just do a quick recap. Lynn Wright is on the line. Lynn's a friend of ours. We've known Lynn. She's been a listener to this programme and a participant for a long time. Terrible thing has happened to Lynn. She's not been well. Very serious open-heart surgery. She deserves the benefits she receives. Personal independence payments were suspended by Capita, working on behalf of the Department for Work and Pensions, saying that she refused to attend assessments, even though she'd bent over backwards to say, well, no, I'm not. First of all, I'm having serious open heart surgery. I'm recuperating from that. I've had other health problems as well. Now, the reason we're dealing with this, and the reason, to the credit of the Welsh and the English national press, that this is being covered, is because this isn't an isolated case. And Lynn, before we find out from you how all this ended up, I want to play a clip from Mike Sivier. Mike is a freelance journalist, and he's been covering these types of stories for 2 or 3 years. And last year, he came on this particular programme. Lynn, I'm not the most technically gifted guy in the world, but I hope you'll be able to hear this. So just bear with me for a second, Lynn. This is Mike Sivier talking to me on the show last year. And what he says is incredibly shocking. This is a credible journalist, okay? Listen to this. Mike Sivier talking about these cases on a programme with me last September. Listen carefully.
Because what we had, at Christmas, we had people coming to me on the blog and saying, oh, I've been taking my work capability assessment. I do have mental health issues. And one of the things that they asked me was, have I ever considered taking my own life? So I said yes. And the very next question was, well, why haven't you done it?
Hang on a second now, Mike. I want you to repeat that now. I've read this as well, right? This is not new to me, but it will be to a lot of our listeners. We'll have listeners now on FM radio around Europe, and they'll say, this is crazy. But I've heard this before. Repeat that again. So they've been asked, have you considered taking your life? And they say, well, I have, because I've been depressed. And then they get asked what?
They get asked, why have you not done so?
Jesus Christ, Mike, that should be a crime, that.
Well, it's... Yeah, I see, to me, I mean, I wrote an article about it, and I called it Checkbook Euthanasia, because the idea is that instead of going back to your Nazi
analogy,
comparison,
yeah,
you know, what they did was they actually euthanized people. They gassed them, or they gave them a lethal injection, whatever was the appropriate, what they saw as the appropriate method at the time for getting rid of these, as you say, useless eaters. But what happens here is, if you've got a mental health problem, you know, they ask you why you haven't killed yourself, and then they leave it hanging.
Do you hear that, Lynn? Is Lynn still with me? I hope she heard that. That was Mike Sivier talking to me on the programme last year, when a number of people had contacted him through his blog to say that when they were discussing mental health problems with assessors for companies like Capita, they were asked in a questionnaire, have you ever contemplated suicide? At that point, they said no, at which point they were asked by the assessor, why not? Did you hear that, Lynn?
Yes, I can't remember whether they've asked me that. I do vaguely remember, because I think it's 2014 when Capita did the first assessment with me, because it took 6 months from being ill and in hospital and being told I was unable to work. It took 6 months to actually get the PIP, because it took that long for them to do all the checks and everything. So I was living on £40 a week up until... For 6 months. I had problems with the ESA. I have income-related ESA, and they kept putting my monthly income down as my weekly income. So over the phone, they said, yes, you qualify. But then when I got the letter, it was said, I'm sorry, you don't qualify, because whoever I was talking to put the wrong thing in the wrong box. And I had to appeal 6 times. For that, so I was 6 months on £40 a week with a mortgage to pay as well, because the critical illness insurance wouldn't pay out on that, you know. And it was it's been horrific because I've worked all my life.
Well, you've paid into the system all your life. Let me ask you this, right? It's a loaded question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because this is what I suspect. Have you been made over the last couple of years, not just the last couple of months, because I've heard this from other people, have you been made feel ashamed for taking assistance from the state, Lynn?
Yes, it's been totally degrading. You're treated like dirt. You're treated, everybody seems to be tarred with the same brush now. It's like if you're collecting benefit or you're on disability, you're a scrounger and you're conning the system. And I mean, I've briefly looked on some of the comments I've got on the Facebook page for the Daily Post, and some of them, the majority of them are supportive, but there's the odd one. And I think, you know, they don't know the full story. One day, God forbid, they'll be in the same situation, and it opens your eyes, you know, because I've always been a businesswoman, I've always worked, I've always been a manager of, you know, I had a career, you know, and all that changed suddenly. And, you know, now I'm not able to work. I hope one day to get back to that position. I don't know whether it's possible. But I've got the determination, you know, to try at least. But God help everybody when I do get back to work, because I won't be going stacking shelves in Tesco's. I'll be probably doing something like you're doing. You know, I'll be, you know, alerting everybody and opening everything.
Opening people's eyes up.
Hands of worms, you know, because...
I just want to say a couple of things in on that, because first of all, programs, and again, I want to keep our US listeners interested in this. They should be, because this is a very serious story and it's important. I know sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, this doesn't relate to me. It does relate to you. Listen to what's going on here. They run programs on national British television like Benefit Street. The Daily Mail will occasionally run stories about jolly-looking men and women with loads of children, and they will say they are ripping off the benefit system. They're earning a combined £70,000 a year. These are not coincidental. Like David Icke says, connect the dots. They want the public at large, they want the country at large, maybe people who are not using or who don't need benefits, people who are fortunate enough not to need them, they want them to detest and despise those who do. And Lynn, let's just use another story published by the BBC in August. This, amazingly enough, this was published around about the time you were having all your problems on the 3rd of August. The BBC ran a story, you might have read this, about a woman called Sarah Goldstein, striking-looking lady with blue hair. But a bright woman, a very bright woman, she has a fibromyalgia and Raynaud's, or I probably pronounced that wrong, yeah, Raynaud's phenomenon. And she's got constant pain. She's in a very difficult situation. She found that somebody working for the government, or somebody working for Capita, a nurse, working on her case, was actually on her personal Facebook page, on the nurse's personal Facebook page, was saying things about people who needed benefits and needed help, saying things like, I'd like to remove his wheels and catapult the scrounger back to whatever shithole he came from.
Good grief.
That's a nurse working for a company like this. So what do you make of when Mike Sivier said that this is checkbook euthanasia? They want to get rid of people, Lynn. They don't want people on benefits. You're either working and you're producing for the state or you're useless.
Well, yeah. That's how you're made to feel. That is. I was shocked because I didn't believe it. When I was on the other side of the fence, when I was working, I was working for some charities and I had volunteers who were disabled, but they were willing to try to do something to contribute to society, and they were willing to give their free time to work for the charity, even though they had difficulties and couldn't possibly hold a full-time job because of, you know, hospital appointments and either mental health issues or whatever.
Let me just read a few tweets.
People don't get to hear that.
People don't get to hear it. Let me just read a few tweets there. So I thought you'd pause, but there was a bit of a gap there. Let me just read a couple of very quick tweets. Joanne Clayton, how you doing, Joanne? Capita have to follow procedures to get paid rather than common sense. It's about processing not compassion. But we understand that when they work on, basically on bonus, they work on incentives. And one of these incentives is, of course, saving money for the government, finding reasons to stop people's payments. That's how this works. This is how sick and sinister this is. Tony tweets, bloody mindless drones. Why are they still in their jobs just on the basis of the stress they caused Lynn at this time? Sean Hinchcliffe says, wheelchair-bound PIP claimants have been refused because they couldn't get in the building because the building wasn't wheelchair accessible. I've heard that as well. Alex tweets, for all who struggle with benefits, these guys are a gift. It's run by disabled claimants. Go to benefitsandwork.co.uk. Let me just tweet that out there. Imagine that one, Lynn. You're punished for not attending, and you're a wheelchair user, and the building that they've asked you to come to isn't wheelchair accessible.
It defies logic. I don't think there is logic in it. You know, it's as if, I don't know how it works, whether they get a bonus if for everyone that they refer back to the DWP as failing to attend or refusing to attend, whether they get a cash and so it, because it seemed a bit strange the way that once they knew I wasn't going to be available, that they seemed to want to get the three, because I told, initially they said, you know, we'll put you as unavailable till the 3rd of June. And I said, that isn't long enough because I've got lupus, I've got diverticular disease, I've got I've got Raynaud's disease as well. You know, there's a lot of other issues. I said, anything could go wrong with that operation. I'm going to take longer to recover. I need longer before you. I'm going to be fit for you to see me. But they refused to move that date. And it seemed like they wanted me to not be available so that they could pass it back to the DWP, and I don't know whether they get an incentive for that, whether, I don't know how it works.
Yeah, we believe they do. In the few minutes we have left, Lynn, and thanks for sharing this with us, and I'm going to say this again, this is as serious a story as we're likely to cover, because you might be listening to this now and you have a job and it pays the bills and your husband or your wife has a job and everything is hunky-dory. What if something happens to you or to your husband or your wife and you have to take care of them because they're unwell and you have to leave your job and they need genuine help from the state? Well, then you're going to think back to interviews with people like Lynn, comments made by Mike Sivier, who also looks after Mike's wife, has a disability. This is serious, folks. Martin Houston tweets out there, let me just scroll back to that. Where is it? It's a very important one, that. What are we paying taxes for if it isn't to look after those who can't look after themselves? Lynn, it's worked out somewhat okay in the end because the suspension on the payments has been lifted. Tell us about that.
It's a very hollow victory, though, because it should never have happened. And the lady that WP Complaints Department, Serious Complaints Department, said that it should never have happened. That's obvious, it goes without saying, but it was because my case was so black and white. I mean, I commented on a Daily Post site of another lady that had her benefits stopped, and I made a comment, and it was accidental that I've ended up, I've not sold my story to the media or anything like that. I've had nothing from it at all, and I wouldn't want anything from it. But I got contacted by a really nice journalist who's my hero now. And he put me at ease and said, you know, would you, you know, make your story known? And although I don't like airing my laundry in public, you know, I thought, well, maybe this is why I've had to go through all this, you know, and it, because my case is so black and white and it should never have happened, that I've found my situation and I'm now talking to you, because it's not just people that, you know, are in the grey areas of do they qualify or do they not qualify. It was illogical what they did, and cruel, and at the worst time they could have possibly done it, and it was because of that that I thought, no, I've got to, I'm not doing it for me.
Damn right, Lynn.
I've got to do it for, hopefully more people will come forward now and tell their story, you know, and stand up.
I emailed the Department for Work and Pensions yesterday to say that you were coming on and to ask for a comment. I haven't received a reply. Now, I'm not going to be childish about that. It is Parliament is in recess, so I might very well get some sort of a, you know, a non-committal answer, an email at some stage, but I haven't heard back from them yet. I want to just read out a couple of quick comments on Twitter. Bastion Radio says, anyone who works for Capita needs to reevaluate their lives. You've got to be desperate and or a sociopath. Lynn, we're just about to run out of time. Before we do, how has the valve in the aorta, that very serious operation, how has it worked out? Is the prognosis going forward good for you, Lynn, on that front anyway?
I don't really know at the moment, because I went for my cardiac rehab, and as soon as I stand up, my heart starts racing as though I'm exercising. So I've not been able to sort of go to the rehabilitation classes where you do sort of exercise and everything yet. I've been re-referred back to them, but I'm still waiting for another appointment. So I don't really know. It's taking longer than it should have done, because of the length of time I was in hospital and everything. I'm determined to try as much as I can, and I'm trying to do what I can at home, you know, and I do, you know, go to the doctors now instead of having district nurses calling, but it can knock me out for a couple of days afterwards sometimes, you know. It's I have good days and bad days, and I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that I get a cardiac rehab appointment soon, and I can make some, you know, more. But usually people get the cardiac rehabilitation after six to eight weeks of the operation. And as I say, it was the 27th of May when I had my operation, and I've still not been able, you know, to do anything yet as regards to moving forward. So it's a very slow.
It's a slow old process. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed for you. You'll be in touch anyway, because you do tune in to the programme occasionally. The journalists in Wales, by the way, Jez Hemming and Ian Lang, great reporting by them, and fair play to the Mirror for picking it up. These are serious stories. You know, folks, when people with illness or disabilities are protesting and standing up to this locally near you, go and stand alongside them, because as I said, it could very well be you. You know, Lynn is a young woman, could very well be you next year or the year after. Lynn, thanks very much. I'm glad it, you know, as you said, it was a hollow victory, but I'm glad that that's been sorted, because you don't have to worry so much about that. You have enough to worry about. And we wish you very well in your recovery, and thanks so much for coming on the programme tonight. I'm really, really happy you did that.
Thanks, Rishi.
Look after yourself. There's a lovely Lynn Wright who's on the line there from Colwyn Bay. And if you've ever been to Colwyn Bay in Wales, a beautiful part of the world. And that's a disgusting thing, that, you know, I'm going to have open heart surgery. It's a major surgery. And you can't make the appointment on such and such a day, because I'm not likely to have been discharged from hospital. Well, we're going to regard that as a refusal, and we're going to stop your payments. And you heard the short clip there of Mike Sivier saying, and we've heard this time and time again, people asking, assessors asking people who've struggled with psychological illnesses, have you considered suicide? And if you haven't, why not? Checkbook euthanasia, Mike Sivier called it. That's exactly what it is. Useless eaters. See, all that stuff, Brave New World, 1984, Blade Runner, all of these latter-day films painting a horrible post-apocalyptic world or a dystopian future. It's all happening in front of our eyes. When you can treat somebody like that. Think if you were in the position of the Capita assessor. You would say, because you, dear listener, are not a psychopath, you would say, oh, Jesus, Lynn, I'm really sorry to hear that. Will you be okay? It's major surgery. Will you be all right? Listen, don't worry about a thing. Give us a call when you've had a good rest after you've come out of hospital, after you've had a good rest, give us a call and then we'll talk. Until then, put it behind you. Don't even think about it. That's what a normal person does. What a psychopath does is, we're going to put that down as a refusal. We'll be back in a minute with more of your comments on Twitter and much more on Thursday's Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Welcome back to the show. A number of you are saying it's wonderful for the Department of Work and Pensions to wash their hands of that. To wash their hands of it and say, well, you know, it's a company, it's a private company now that handles all of that. You see, this is Ian Duncan Smith. He's gone now, of course. It's Stephen Crabb now, young, good-looking guy. This is what they're out to do, you see. This is all part of the ultimately much larger and much more sinister Agenda 21, Agenda 30. It's about getting rid of people. And if you don't believe that and you think that is absolutely beyond the pale conspiracy theory, why not look up on our YouTube channel, managed by our friend Simon Stewart, why not look up an interview or several interviews we did with Professor of Social Health at Liverpool University, Alex Scott Samuel, who said to me recently, when discussing the story that the government is again going to bring in a whole new raft of right to buy your council house and all of that, that this is ultimately designed to privatise housing, and it doesn't matter, to privatise social housing, and it doesn't matter where the people who thought they could afford to buy their council house, but they can't. They get a mortgage, they can't pay it, they default, they lose the property is privatised. They don't care where those people go, even if they go on the streets. This is the level of psychopathy. And I said this yesterday, I said it Tuesday, and I said it Monday. Our news programmes are full to the brim about the evil Bashar al-Assad and the terrible conditions in Aleppo. Lot of lies there, by the way. Check out 21stcenturywire.com to find out what's really going on in Aleppo. While we're treating people like that here in Britain, not to mention what we heard about the Saudi Arabian regime on the news earlier on and crimes being reported against humanity at the United Nations. Look what's going on here. It's incredible. It's 3 minutes past the hour. It's Thursday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Let me remind you, we broadcast live on alternatecurrentradio.com. Check it out. FabRadioInternational.com and DavidIke.com. Check out David's website. And the WorldWideWakeUp.com is the place to go to find out where you can see David in America and in Europe. I can't recommend it highly enough. Well, you would say that, Richie. No, I can't recommend it highly enough. It's a day you'll never forget as long as you live. 12 hours of wonderment, of amazement, of awe, of shock, of horror, of joy, of fun. Incredible. Check out the worldwidewakeup.com. The tweets are flying in here. But I've got to take music because our next guest is standing by in Ontario to talk with us. Remember, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter and richie@richieallen.co.uk. This is Gareth Ike, speaking of the Ikes. And he played this at his wedding for me. He did, actually. This is a terrific song called Jura from Gareth Ike's new album. Back with Sandra Effect in exactly 3.5 minutes' time.
Down into the depths. All these words you left unspoken fill a harbor of regrets. Jura, jura, jura,
jura, jura,
won't you save your best for?
Love that song, favorite song of 2016, Jura by Gareth Ike. It's exactly 8 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the programme. Now, our next guest was first on this programme last year. We were thrilled and amazed to hear from her. She's based in Ontario. She is a counsellor and therapist, and we have a lot of time for her. Now, she went public last year, the year before last, to say that while counselling patients, she began to hear some very disturbing stories. And the stories had some very disturbing similarities. Stories about ritual satanic abuse. Stories about reptilian-looking entities. She heard so many of these stories that she felt she had to speak out on it. And we're delighted that she did. Now, recently she was in York doing a series of workshops. And she sent me an email in the last couple of days to tell me that she's due back in the UK next month to carry on those workshops, and I'm delighted to welcome back to the programme from Ontario, Sandra Fecht. Sandra, welcome back. How are you?
Well, I'm wonderful, and thank you so much for having me, Richie, and how are you?
I'm really well. I've had a 3-week break, and this is my first week back, Sandra, so I'm chasing the devil by the tail. All is good, yeah, I can't complain. I'm in great form. I love you, I love the work you've done, and it's a shame you're so lovely, Sandra, and I'm not patronising you, because what we're going to talk about is fairly horrifying.
Yes, it is.
You know, as marvellous as you are, and because the last time we chatted was back in February, and listeners joining all the time, do you want to give, before we talk about the workshops and the great work you're going to do there and that you did in York, tell us about remind our listeners how you first came across these stories and the types of things that people were telling you in therapy.
Okay, well, I'm now a counselor. Until I get registered, I have to call myself a counselor, not a psychotherapist. So I'm a counselor, and I've been doing this job for many, many years. And I used to think that counseling was just tea and sympathy. They're there. You're a good person. God loves you. Here's some information. You'll be fine. But back in the, well, first of all, to back up a bit, I went up to the Northwest Territories, and the Native people up there told me about the horrors of the residential schools, but really I did not have the ears to hear it. I was not ready for it. I also worked in training schools in 1970s. And again, those girls were telling me things. And even though they had been prostituting, some of them, since they were 9 years old, we did not add up sexual abuse because we didn't have the concepts or the language to appreciate what these children had been through. They were actually part, as anybody would know now, of the child sex slave thing. But we didn't know it back then, so we couldn't hear it, we couldn't understand it. Those young ladies were incarcerated, and that was what we knew. When I went to work for Soldiers Memorial Hospital in Orillia, at some point there was a call for therapists to, or counselors to, volunteer for 5 hours a week for 2 years to be trained by a woman from the States called Cindy Blazewski. And she would train us in how to deal with sexual abuse. Well, I had never heard of sexual abuse. So I volunteered and took the training. And I started to realize that the people I was dealing with in the mental health system had the same symptoms as these children that we knew had been abused. And after 2 years, I took the bold step of suggesting to the staff at the hospital that perhaps this was the case. It was not well received, to say the least. And, it was shocking. And I was called some pretty nasty names and marginalized. But I thought, well, I have to keep doing this. Eventually, I went to work with another organization where the remainder of the volunteers for Cindy's program worked. And even amongst them, some of them said, you know, at that time, I call it the therapy wars, that we should now call it the counseling wars, I suppose, that we should not be dealing with this type of distress because it further traumatized people, that we should just leave well enough alone. But my reasoning was that, you know, if they had been through this, then it was our job to find something, you know, find a treatment that would work. So I set out on that road, and I found some treatments that worked beautifully. The big surprise to me was that, I mean, I knew that at that point somehow that the information when they were traumatized was being suppressed. And it wasn't until later that the research came out from UCLA that cortisol is secreted when somebody is in trauma, when they've been through a horrible experience, and it packs the part of the memory that you cannot process into your mind, and it's only released as you're able to deal with it. And I just, you know, I realized that's where the power was in finding these memories that were locked up. So I set out to develop methods to find them. So I studied energy work and neuro-linguistic programming and shamanism and a bunch of things, and found ways to really beautifully and gently lift this out of the person. In so doing, I inadvertently stumbled across SRA, Satanic Ritual Abuse. I had no idea. For 2 years, I thought these people were barking mad. I really did. I was trained in a medical model, so what I did was send them back to their doctors and psychiatrists and say, you know, you need more than I'm giving you, so here you go.
This is important, Sandra, because this goes right to the heart of your credibility and why you are so credible. Because you did this. You didn't believe it. You thought that it was fantasy, and you referred people back, and you basically dismissed it. But it repeated itself time and time and time again. What point did you start to think to yourself, this is so familiar, this? I've heard a similar story from somebody completely unconnected. When did the light bulb go off above your head then, when you had to reevaluate what you'd previously thought?
Well, I have to say that light bulb went on very slowly. It was like right. On a dimmer switch. It
wasn't overnight, yeah. Yeah.
I eventually came to the place where I thought, you know, these people cannot be all crazy in the same way. And, you know, we don't call that crazy. So I started to listen up a bit. And I honestly, I think the moment at which the penny dropped for me, I was so traumatized by that realization that I truly do not remember. I repressed it, but I remember thinking, oh my God, these stories are true. And I was just numbed out. And I phoned every church in town till I could find somebody who would speak to me. And I was very fortunate to find someone at the church who would, at a church who would tell me about it. And he was wonderful. His name was Canon Gracie, and he explained a lot of what was happening to me, or to my clients, rather, what I was hearing. Eventually, I had a client, like I knew enough at this point to ask people not to talk about it, because when clients first come in, you don't know who's on what side. And if you start talking to everyone, then you may be tipping off the very people who have been abusing you or been connected with people who are abusing you. So my advice is, like, if you start finding this stuff, do not go telling everyone. Just keep it to yourself for a while. So what happened was, this one person did not heed that advice, talked to several people. And I thought, well, we've got to do something about this. So I made a list of all potential suspects in the event that anything should happen to them, trotted it down to the police station. Then I received a death threat. And, you know, there was nothing that convinced me more than what I'm about to tell you, that this stuff is real.
Now, just before you tell us that, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt now, but let's suspend that for a second. I know this from speaking to you, but again, our listeners, some of them will have never heard this story before. Mm-hmm. So you tell the police this, the right thing to do, because the people who perpetrate these crimes against children and subject them to these horror film type, nightmarish type, Dante's Inferno type things, they're very powerful and they are dangerous. Now, when you told the police what you thought was going on, what was their attitude? Did they take it seriously?
Well, the first thing I did was take that list of names to the police. The second thing was I reported the death threat. I didn't tell them anything about what was happening at that time. But and then my building was spray painted with symbols. I did not know that symbols contained so much power, and that they were used by dark and light sides to increase or decrease energy. And it took one of my clients to say, Sandra, those are satanic symbols. I had no clue. So I again reported it to the police. This is in the days well before cell phones and iPhones and little cameras everywhere. Unfortunately, I did not take photographs. But the police officer who reported that, which was my third report, was good enough to come back to me and say, Sandra, you need to know that all your police reports are being, quotes, prematurely deleted. And at that point, I knew it was real. And it was almost like, thank you, folks. Thank you for the death threat. Thank you for spraying my building. And thank you for deleting the police reports, because now I know this is happening.
That was it. There could be no going back from that point. You knew this was real. The horrors of realizing that the police are not in a position to deal with this, that the police are way down the trough, so to speak, Sandra. That, I mean, that's terrifying for any person, for any healthcare worker, for a doctor, for a counsellor, to realize that, holy, you know, whatever, holy cow, Batman, there's nobody going to look after me.
That's it. Honestly, I looked over my shoulder for a good number of years. But when I received that threat, you know, they told me to back off or else. And I said, well, I'm not backing off, so I guess it's plan B. And I didn't know what they would do. But I was not going to back down, because I realized that somewhere along the line, we have to find the backbone and stand up, you know.
Can I just mention something here? It's been tweeted. A lot of people are tweeting on this. Martin tweets, too many senior police are Freemasons or similar. Wait till I tell you this, Sandra. You might be aware of this. Back in 1989, Britain had its worst ever soccer disaster. There was a crush at a big soccer game in Sheffield, and 96 Liverpool supporters were killed. And at the time, the police covered it up and tried to blame it on the Liverpool supporters. But it was actually police ineptitude and catastrophically bad decisions made by the police which led to too many supporters being in one, almost like a pen. You remember back in the days when there were fences at sports grounds and people were fenced in. Now it's come to light that the police today are investigating Masonic lodges, Sandra, because some of the senior police officers involved in covering up what happened back in 1989 have been connected to Masonic lodges. So that's an amazing comment by Martin, going to what you said about, you know, about the police that you spoke with. Too many senior police are Freemasons or similar. That's an extraordinary thing, and again, it's something that, you know, we have to consider. It's do you want to, without, I mean, we're past the watershed here. I know it's just after 4 p.m. there. Do you want to give us, again, and I'm not doing this for sensationalism, I'm doing it for levity. Remind our listeners of some of the horrific things, one or two things that left you absolutely speechless that your patients were telling you they experienced.
Well, I'm not quite sure what the question is there. Like, you're asking me to tell you what my convincers were or what happened to them?
What happened to them? Give us an idea of some of the things that you learned they had experienced at these when they were being abused.
Okay. First of all, one of the things I couldn't understand was why they could get away with so many babies being sacrificed. And what I came to learn from my very patient clientele was that there were breeders, that there were people who were used as breeders to produce offspring exclusively for that use. And with these children, they could manipulate the other children. The other thing is the constant use of dreadful sexuality, sodomizing and raping with crucifixes and this kind of thing. And I do apologize for how offensive this is. I think the thing, if I can just step out of that for a moment, Richie.
Yeah.
I think the thing for us is to keep a positive attitude even while we're staring this thing in the face. You know, you've got to stay away from the lower vibrational emotions like fear and shame and horror and disgust and all the rest of it. Yes, it is all of that and more. But at the same time, we have to keep ourselves in a really high vibration place, however we do it. And anyone who deals with this, I would strongly suggest that they really work their spiritual program so that they're able at the end of the day to just shake it off and live in joy, because you're safe when you live in joy. You know, they can't touch you then.
It's brilliantly said, that. And the reason why I wanted to bring up a couple of examples was just for context, because the context that so many people in society don't believe these stories. And that's why I wanted to mention one or two of them, to give our audience a kind of a flavour of why people struggle to believe this, even though it is going on. I mean, I've interviewed Fiona Barnett on the programme. I'm sure you know all about Fiona. Sandra, I know you do. I mean, Fiona describes, and she's not the first person. We've had people from America come on. I've had somebody from Ireland over the years come on and tell me, you know, describe the hunting parties where children are hunted for sport and all of this. So I don't want to be raking over that. And you're absolutely spot on to mention low vibrational energy and avoiding that. But for context, it's important to understand the things that these children were releasing in therapy. Now, just to do a quick recap, it's 25 past the hour. Sandra Fecht is on the line to us from Ontario. She's a brilliant counsellor. She's described at length here how she came to understand satanic ritual abuse and that it was an absolute epidemic through counselling children, young adults, older people, and hearing these stories. Initially very sceptical about them, as all of us were, by the way. I want to scroll down because there was a really interesting comment that came in from Lou, and I want to read that, and then I want to talk about the workshop, Sandra, because I was really gutted to miss your workshops in York which isn't a million miles away from here. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work out for me to come and see you. But I hope to see you next time. Lou tweets, I often find that those who eventually recover memories in therapy of abuse are told they are implanted memories. And that's, excuse me, a brilliant comment, because this is how the system works, the tyrannical nature of it. It has an answer for everything, doesn't it, Sandra?
Oh, absolutely.
Brilliant workers like you and others, without you know, imposing your beliefs or your ideas on people, you elicit these experiences from children, from men, from women, and the system says, oh, they were implanted. That's what they do.
I think, first of all, I know for sure that isn't the case, but I'm going to give you a bit of history here. I didn't believe any of it. I didn't read this stuff. I didn't watch horror movies about it. I didn't believe any of it. I just thought it was all just beyond ridiculous, and I wasn't going to go there because I just wanted to study the good side and figure out, you know, how to keep my own soul in good shape. But the other thing is how the false memory group got started. And I don't know if your listeners know that entire story, and it's quite the story. There is a professor, her name is Jennifer Frey, F-R-E-Y, and she is a licensed psychologist who does research. And she started to spontaneously remember the abuse of by her father. So she went and confronted him. He's a wealthy businessman. And his reaction was to start the false memory group. Now, it should be noted that I have heard and read stories, first of all, that he was a drinker, or is a drinker. I don't even know if he's still around. And that he made his daughters walk around the house naked. You know, that's a very strange behavior. But even more condemning is the fact that he started that false memory group with a PhD named Ralph Underweger. And if you look up that name, you will find that he was quoted in a magazine in Europe. I think it's called Padika, but I can't quite remember. But if you Google Ralph Underweger, it turned out that he was extolling the virtues of man-boy love and felt that it was reasonable to assume that being a pedophile was an okay sexual choice. And this is the quality of person who was condemning people such as myself and others who were attempting to find the truth in all of this. And he was eventually let go, but I think it speaks volumes. These are the same people, you know, they had their butts whooped when they tried to say sexual abuse wasn't real, and now everybody knows it is. And they have the absolute moxie to try it again and say, oh, well, neither is satanic abuse. Well, it seems to me that false memory isn't real, because if you know what you're doing, you know, when you regress somebody, and what I found is that if you're a hypnotherapist and you're listening, that the alpha brainwave state is the best place to be, because it gives the person access to the unconscious, but they still keep in control and they remember what they've said. And what happens is that if the hypnotherapist just gets the person into that beautiful, light, relaxed state, they have access to that unconscious, but you don't tell them, gee, do you see, you know, a purple banana or whatever?
Of course, Sandra, of course, yeah.
You know, you just say, tell me, like totally open-ended questions. Tell me what you're aware of. Not even do you see or do you hear. It's just, what are you aware of? And you just keep saying, and once they start on something, it's like, well, then what? And then what? And what you're looking for when you do this kind of regressive work is the incidents that happened so that you can find the triggers and the programs, and if there are any energetics or spiritual parts missing. I mean, I used to think that the horrors that they perpetrated on people were the end game, and I rolled around in that for a lot of years because you just get stuck in it. It's just so nasty. But I'm hoping that I can bypass that part of my journey for a lot of people by telling anybody who counsels or does energy work or hypnotherapy out there, that isn't the end game. The torture and all of the dreadful things they do, such as, you know, alert, here comes another bad one, eating body parts and drinking blood and so on. I mean, they have other purposes, but amongst those purposes is the fact that the person is so traumatized that they will start to dissociate. And I have actually met people whose job it was to take the energy, they can see the energy, and to take the energy as it comes out of the body and gather it and direct it wherever the cult wants it to go. I mean, we have been so led away from this kind of understanding, you know, and I'm wondering even if it started with the burning of the library in Alexandria.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a brilliant point. That.
Yeah, well, we've just been so trained to look at the physical part of life and not the physical energetic part that we don't even think to look for that anymore. But that's where the game is really played. It's really a game of energy, spirituality, and souls.
You know, and you know, because you've looked at his work as well, but David was laughed out of town years ago for talking about their desire for the prepubescent energy of children. He was laughed out of town for saying that. And now, you know, I remember when you first came on the program, he was absolutely astonished and thrilled. I don't mean, you know, it's difficult to be thrilled about this, but, you know, to hear a counsellor, and we labelled you at the time a mainstream counsellor, that wasn't in any way to insult you, but you've come from, you know, you've come from, I suppose, you know, we shouldn't say an establishment background, but you'd be, you know, considered somebody important. Yeah, you know, your work, the work that you've done, where you've been, where you've worked. And I'm conscious when you're talking about you coming to understand that, again, how difficult it would be for you to get your peers to pay any attention to that, Sandra. That's a whole other program, right?
Well, you know, it could be. I just think it's next to impossible because it's almost the kiss of death for your practice. I mean, I lost people by droves. It's the death knell for your reputation, and you get all the shaming and social and professional marginalization that you can tolerate. You know, I've had doctors tell people, don't go to her because, you know, she finds this stuff. Fabulous. You know, I mean, I've had a very busy practice, but, you know, I have lost a lot of people because they thought that this was fiction or something. But some people choose. They would rather hold on to their problems than face their truth. The thing that I find enormously distressing about that, but I have to stay in a good place, but, you know, I shake my head at it, is that whatever you don't deal with is handed down genetically. So it's like, you know, here, my child, this is your inheritance. And it's all the fear and all the trauma that you have not resolved. Your children inherit that. Is that what you want your legacy to be?
I'm going to do a quick time check. Then I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that are coming in on Twitter. 25 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. We've probably got Sandra for another 15 minutes. Thanks for tweeting me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's where you need to go, and it's richie@richieallen.co.uk. Now, if you want to find Sandra online, it's sandraeffect.com. Couldn't be any simpler. I'm going to tweet that website out there now, and you can read more about Sandra and the treatments that she offers and where she's been and what she's done. Some tweets came in. One came in from Dion, who I believe is in Copenhagen. Now, I think the first time you were on, we mentioned this briefly. You know what I think about it. It's the Hampstead claims of the children and Ella Draper and all of that. I believe a lot of people were duped. I believe all of the things described by the children certainly go on in the world and on a massive scale. But I think the system is not idiotic. And I think the system will at times throw out these allegations in places where it's not going on in order to muddy the waters and make it all look like a big hoax. And I know you've spoken about this before, but again, you know, people haven't heard it. To Dion's question, what do you make of the Hampstead allegations? What did you make of that?
Well, I haven't done a thorough study of that, but my thought is that if children know about this stuff, then, you know, they learned it from somewhere. And even if they were told to say it, how disgusting is that?
Absolutely.
And where did that come from?
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Look, I've had arguments with people about this, Sandra. I've had arguments because we talk about it on the program and because we accept and we tell people that it goes on. It's horrified some people that I don't believe it. It just smells to me. I had conversations with a lovely woman who was close for a while to the family. I had a Skype conversation with somebody claiming to be Ella Draper. I think it was Ella Draper. And I just don't believe it. I believe that at the time, with everything we learned about Savile, with everything we were learning about Leon Britton and all the, you know, the proximity to the royal family, all of that, it's just the system's way to throw out stories like that, to completely throw people. And then they can always point and say, look what a ridiculous hoax that was. And I'm not, you know, I just don't buy that story. But hey, what the hell do I know? I could be wrong. And if I'm proven wrong, I'll be the first one to put my hand up. But I never felt right about that. But you're absolutely right, of course. We have a video where children are describing the most disgusting things. Who told them that sort of stuff? You know, I mean, that's a trauma in itself to be talking to children about those sorts of things if somebody did coerce the children into doing it. I've been asked to ask you, Sandra, in your opinion, what sort of scale, I mentioned scale already, but you know more about this than I do. What sort of scale do we think we're talking about here globally? These things happening to people, how big is this, do you think, after your studies?
Well, I mean, I only have my little view of the world from here, but my guess would be that 1 in 3 people is involved, they're involved in one way or another. You know, either as perpetrators or as victims or as someone who has somehow been a part of this. I once told that to a very grounded Native therapist, and she looked at me in her way. She said, your numbers are too low. And so I guess in her experience, it was more than 1 in 3. But that's globally, I think that's probably the case. I mean, you have to remember that there are places, most places in the world, this stuff goes on in the open. You know, it's known by different names all over the world, but in Africa and the Caribbean and in Asia and India and South America, you know, there's black magic of all sorts and all of these things are going on, but people know. And they can make a choice, you know, which way do I want to go on this? The thing that I think sets the European events apart is that we deceive people into thinking it isn't happening. And I swear that we have a genetic memory of the Inquisition and the witch burnings that we are so terrified to look at it lest, you know, something happens to us. And but we have to. Enough of us have to stand up and take a look at it and say, you know what, this is happening. And I know we will come to a tipping point just as we did with sexual abuse. So, and I witnessed that one firsthand, and I'm just hanging in to witness this one.
Tell us about the workshops then. This is important. You're going to be back in the UK next month, and you can tell us where you're going to be and when. What happens in the workshops? What do you do there? What can people expect from them? And how are they helpful and beneficial to people?
Well, first of all, we're going to Switzerland from September 23rd to 25th. We're going to be in Dornach, Switzerland. And you can take a look at that through trauma-based mind control. That was started by a woman named Andrea Sadek from Austria. She lost her child to the cult. You know, she's still trying to find her son and get him back. And So that workshop is then, and we have a really great lineup for that one. Andrea will be speaking, and Annette Hafner, who is an energy worker and counselor, Fran, who was with us on the last one in York, and Fran Toes has the wonderful ability to be able to put it all together, and you know, we sort of play off one another, and it's just amazing the information that is developed about the uses, the devices that they use for the spiritual and energetic part. I'm really hoping that she writes a book on that someday. Kevin Annette is going to also try and make an appearance there. And, you know, I told you I was in the north and listened to the native children telling me what happened, and it just kind of went over my head. Well, Kevin didn't stop there. He took it seriously and found this document that was penned by three churches to exterminate the children, the native population, through the residential schools. And his books, Unrelenting and Murder by Decree, are just, I mean, I've worked in this field for a long time. Even so, I found them rather startling. So he's hoping to be there. Christina Bevere and Joanne Lomax from the United Kingdom, who is also organizing the workshop that we're having at the Village Hotel Centennial Park in Elstree. And that one is taking place September 30th and October 1st and 2nd. And Richie, I'd be pleased to invite you to come as my guest. I'd just love to meet you and love to show you some of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, I'm going to do my absolute best to get it's London, of course. We're in Manchester. Uh-huh. But I'm going to try and work something out, Sandra. It's vital. It's, to me, none of this was in my life, was on my mind until a few years ago, until mm-hmm. I began speaking with David on the radio in Spain. And I was very reluctant initially to want to go down those roads with him on the radio, because it was a commercial radio show. It wasn't an independent radio program like this. I mean, we have an enormous audience. We're blessed that we do. In fact, I would have had less of an audience then, but it was commercial and it was owned by a private businessman. And I was terrified of going down that mm-hmm. particular road and discussing these things. And I'm going to be honest with you, I wouldn't have believed a lot of it either, you know, at the time.
No, and who would? And there's such a high price to pay in many ways when you do start to surface the truth. For me, what I've decided is that there are several methods by which I examine whether or not it's true. And one is if I've heard the story many times. One is if there is, if it's in the Bible or some ancient text, if another culture has it. And in the birch bark scrolls of some of the native tribes in Canada, they talk about the lizards. So, you know, you read references to it everywhere. So I know that it's correct, besides my own experience. And that's another convincer for me, is my own experience. And the next one is the scientific validation. You know, this stuff is in all of those places. And if that is, you know, if you have those kinds of convincers, then you know it's right. And you either have to go with what you know truth is, or you go with popular consent. But our society is designed on every level to keep us subjugated. Alex Constantine's book, Psychic Dictatorship, is rather chilling in that respect, because it really reveals the plan. And we have to take personal responsibility for every part of our lives, because handing it over to the state just doesn't work. If you look at the agricultural system, the pharmaceutical system, the education, the media, the entertainment, and the spiritual delivery system, then none of those is really working for us. And we've got to take responsibility for finding the news ourselves, educating ourselves, eating properly, and doing our own spiritual development.
I know that the workshops will be an absolute fantastic success. remind our listeners, we'll tweet anyway, where they find out more about them, Sandra. Do you want them to go to your website?
Actually, Richie, I'm not very computer literate. I don't have it on my website. If they want to find out about it, they can email me or email Joe. They can phone Joe Lomax. I can give you her phone number. They can email me or go to Eventbrite. It's on Eventbrite. So I think that probably those would be the best ways. Finding out through people like this radio show. Those are the
best avenues for people to find out more about it.
The other one, the Trauma Congress or Trauma Congress and Workshop in Switzerland. If you go to trauma-based mind control and SRA or satanic ritual abuse, it's on there. There's also going to be, I should mention, a conference in Prague, Czechoslovakia, on the weekend of the 9th, 10th. And there are a lot of big names showing up for that one. And it'll be an excellent lineup. I'm just trying to find the name of the hotel for that one. Hotel Adria. It's going to be in the Lucerna Great Hall. So I think you'd have to Google those places. My name, Sandra Fecht at sandrafecht.com, or my email, sandrafecht@rogers.com, and my name is F as in Frank, E-C-H-T, F-E-C-H-T. And then the trauma-based mind control, and you can Google workshops in Prague, the conference room at the Lucerna Great Hall. But I think the important thing that you'll be getting there is, one, a whole lot of testimonials that this stuff is happening, to the end game and how to deal with it, and techniques for overcoming it.
Sounds brilliant, Sandra. Fantastic stuff. Thanks for coming back on the program. I enjoy talking to you and listening to you, despite the horrible nature of the subject and what it is we're actually talking about.
Can I mention one more thing?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah, go ahead.
Kevin Annett, through the ITCCS, I always get this name mixed up. I thought I had it down, but the International Tribunal for, good grief, I had it all written out too.
The Crimes of Church and State, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, thank you, dear.
Yeah, we've had Kevin on. It's been a long time, by the way, since Kevin was on this program. It's about time we give him a shout and ask him to come back on. Yeah,
but they've had they're appealing to the Russian leader Putin to help them enforce convictions, stopping the ritual killing of children by the Ninth Circle, the Satanic Ritual Group, after the UN ignored their request for help. So I think if you had Kevin on, it would be a great idea.
Yeah, it's about time you got him back on. Sandra, Godspeed to you. Continued success in all that you do. And I look forward to catching up with you when you're over this side of the pond. Thanks for all you do, Sandra. Look after yourself. Keep an eye on yourself. These are serious things you're revealing and serious things you're talking about. And there are people who don't like it. So keep your eyes open at all times.
I will. And God bless you too. Thanks, Richie.
Bye for now. Sandra Fecht on the line to us there from Ontario in Canada. Special woman. Terrible, terrible subject. Dreadful stuff, really, when you think about it. I don't like getting into the details of what goes on, but for context, because it's only when you hear the stories, and Fiona Barnett in Australia was on the programme a couple of times, and you hear the stories, then you can understand. Because I think you have to understand why people don't believe it. You can't ignore that. You can't just close your eyes to it. Well, we'll talk about it amongst ourselves till the end of time. There's no point in that. We have to alert people to it without coming across like raving lunatics. Because when you hear about hunting parties and when you hear about some of the things Sandra described earlier on, it's just... I would, at the risk of getting a smack from you, it's normal to think, no way. That's the sort of thing now out of, as I said, Dante earlier on, or, you know, latter day writers like Wes Craven. Nobody's doing that. they are. But how do you communicate that with people? How do you explain to them the scale of it? Did you hear David Icke the other night talking about why they slow down the historic child sex abuse inquiry? Why they obfuscate? Why they put roadblocks in the way? Justice Lowell Goddard retires and has gone back to New Zealand, washed their hands of it. Because the scale of it is unimaginable. Even to me sometimes. Sometimes I think, really? And then I have a look at the evidence. I think, yeah, it really is. It's going on all around us. It's 9 minutes to the top of the hour. Quick break back to wrap up.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the programme. Big thanks to Lynn Wright, who was on the programme earlier on. Terrific woman, Lynn. A very difficult experience dealing with CAPITA and the Department for Work and Pensions. Wonderfully courageous woman. Thanks for all your tweets there coming in. I've been retweeting lots of them. Hundreds came in. I got caught and I didn't really want to interrupt Sandra too often and read too many of them out. But thanks for them. Again, to follow what I'm saying on Twitter, or not what I'm saying, to follow what others are saying to me on Twitter, go to twitter.com and put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in there. When you press enter, you'll basically be able to see what everybody else is saying to me. And then you can basically, thanks Martin Houston for tweeting, Eventbrite, by the way, I've just retweeted that. Right then, just a quick funding appeal. I was away for 3 weeks, as you know, and regrettably, there was some cancellation of small donations to the programme. I don't know what was going on there. I don't know whether people thought that I was gone or I had left or I was gone for good. But that's alarming to me. I haven't gone anywhere and we're going to go right through now until Christmas with the programme. So look, to donate, go to richieallen.co.uk. There are bank transfer details there, but also my PayPal email address is richieallen@hotmail.co.uk. Make a donation if you can. As I say all the time, if you can't, don't worry about that. Now, Monday's a bank holiday. You know there are problems with the TV show at the moment. I told you already, due to a break-in and due to a very serious theft, BeyondVision.tv is currently unable to make programmes. We'll be back soon, though, on the Friday. Now, beginning next Friday, not tomorrow, while the TV show is away, I'm going to do a Friday weekly news review programme in the place of the television show. I would do that tomorrow, except I'm at the dentist. I've got 3 more serious dental appointments to go, so I can't do that tomorrow. So I'll be back with you next live on Tuesday night, because Monday's a bank holiday. No studio access on bank holidays. Can't do anything about that. So I'll be with you on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, at 8 p.m. BST as normal. Big thanks to the show, the Richie Allen Show team, to Simon, to Aaron, and to Claire Calvi for production. Lots going on next week. Jim Mars is back live on the programme for the first time in about 6 months. Got Jim live on the programme on Tuesday. Lots more coming up next week as well. I look forward to chatting to you then. So all that's left for me to say in the meantime is once again thanks to our guests, to Sandra Fecht and also to Lynn Wright, courageous Lynn, who spoke with us in the first hour. And have a terrific long weekend. Well, it is a long weekend in Ireland and England, the bank holiday weekend. I don't know if it is in America. I don't think it is. Enjoy the weekend. Spend it with those you love. Take care of one another. And I look forward to talking to you early next week. Following this, we'll have a special Take Your Power Back, Healing Meditation from Kim Hutchison, which is relevant to what we were speaking with Sandra Ficht about. So that's coming up in a couple of minutes' time. Check out Kim, livingasyoursoul.com. That's coming up in a couple of minutes' time. Taking us there, though, is this from the brilliant Cat Stevens. Have a terrific weekend. I'll see you on Tuesday. Bye for now. Bye now.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun.